section86.com. We're changing the world of podcasting, one show at a time.
You are about to enter the dirty stalls of It Burns When I Pee. This podcast is for mature audiences only. The views and opinions expressed on this show are usually rude, crude, and offensive, and should not be associated with our guests and sponsors in any way. Please proceed to the first available stall and prepare for takeoff.
Welcome, everyone, to another gripping episode of It Burns When I Pee, the number one podcast for roots music, adult comedy, and interviews. The podcasting god, Blake Clayton, along with his revolving group of co-hosts, are preparing for launch. Please adjust your volume, remove all morals and values, and prepare yourself for what we like to call auditory dysentery. We go live in
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ignition.
Mission control to podcasting god, you are clear to proceed. I repeat, you are clear to proceed.
Dear friend, I can see a better day. friend. Well on our way. I can see you in the sunlight again. Oh, friend, dear friend, can you feel that Oregon rain? Oh, friend, dear friend, I can see your better days. Oh, friend, dear friend, we're well on our way.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Dirty Stalls of a Burns When I Pee. And I have a very special guest with us from the Harm Brothers, and it's my good friend Ray Vetti. Ray, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you, Blake?
I'm doing great. It's been a long time. I've wanted to get you guys on the show with the release of the new album, Better Days, What Better Time. And you had some time, so I appreciate you coming with us.
Yeah, no problem. I appreciate you having me.
So the first question is the easy one. We'll start with the easy ones. But how did the band get its name, the Harm Brothers?
You would think that's an easy question, but... It's really not. We get asked that question a lot, and it's kind of a long answer. However, the short of it is that a friend of mine and myself were being kind of sad little boys in a sense, I think, at a time in our life. And before it was really even a project, it was just an idea that he and I had of playing some songs together. And... We were just trying to come up with a name for something that we could do. And he actually, my buddy Billy Reed came up with it, and he was like, the harm, he said harm. And I was like, yeah, I like that, but let's go past tense with it and put it harmed. And it just kind of, it became, that became the name. I didn't want to ever go away from it,
awesome.
Even with all the revolving door stuff that we've had.
Right. So when did you first start playing guitar? And also, I guess the second part of the question is, when did you decide to make music your career?
Well, I didn't get a guitar until I was, I think, 19. And I had no idea how to play it, of course. And I jokingly will say that I still have no idea how to play it. So I don't know how much of a joke that really is. But I got one when I was 19, and it seemed like I would just pick up things from different people that I would come across, wherever, just see somebody playing, in an apartment or on a porch or something, at a party, and just ask them questions about it and kind of try and put that together for myself. And, maybe they'd come over and show me a thing or two, but it took a long time for me to get comfortable with playing. And then, as far as playing, my intentions with it were just to be able to sit on a porch and sing songs with my friends at a party. And I had got to the point where I was, doing what I thought I was fairly, fairly good at that part of it. And I'd started kind of just messing around with the idea of writing songs. And a buddy of mine in Kansas City, Missouri, I was living in Kansas City, he called me one day, and a band that he had, he worked for a radio station, and a band that he had coming out to a remote canceled on him last minute, and he called me, being like, I know you can play. You got to come out and do this. I've never done that before in my life, man. I was like, I don't know if I can do that. And he just kept talking at me. And he's like, just get out here. He finally swayed me into it. And it was a biker bar. And there was nothing but bikers there. And I was singing, Tom Petty songs and stuff, just cover songs. And it went over pretty well. And then later that night, I ended up kind of turning that into an every Thursday gig at a different bar that I ended up going to. And so then I was like, wow, this is awesome. Like, I'm getting to play some music. And it was just like every Thursday. And then slowly it kind of put together, a few folks that wanted to play. And then we started playing more shows on top of my every Thursday thing. And before you know it, I was kind of like not really doing anything as far as work went, really, too exclusively anyway, just kind of being able to survive barely, off of that. And it kind of just snowballed into something, you know. And I started doing that as cover songs and stuff, and then I was like, I think I can do this my own songs. And you know, I just eventually it kind of snowballed into that.
Awesome. So if you hadn't picked up that guitar, what do you think you'd be doing as your career today?
Yeah, it's hard to say, man. I wasn't very good at keeping a job. I've had a lot of different jobs in my day. I guess the one that I had the most was, you know, being an electrician. But to be honest, like, I probably wasn't much of an electrician. You know, I could pull wire, but I tend to get a little afraid of electricity. Maybe that's why I tend to stick with acoustic instruments.
There you go. So how did you and Alex Sesito get together?
Well, the first installment, if you will, of the Harm Brothers that actually went on a tour was myself, Ben Kilmer, who's our drummer now, and Zach Kilmer, who is our acting East Coast bass player. And it was the three of us, and it was acoustic guitar and or banjo, and I would play either of those, and then electric bass and a drum kit. And then Ben and Zach would, and Ben would drop down, and he would do guitar, I would do banjo, and Zach, the bass player, would do a mandolin or another guitar at any time, kind of moving like that. And we went on a tour together from, at the time I was living in North Carolina, and we had just made a little EP together, you know, just a little in-the-basement type thing. And I just cold called a bunch of venues thinking, okay, like, let's see if we can take this, make it more of like, instead of just doing shows in a local scene, you know, playing, you know, once a weekend or something, you know, some here and maybe once a week and somewhere else, just being weekend warriors, if we could take it on to the, you know, out into the world. And ended up booking a tour. Well, I booked it all the way out to Oregon because I'd been out there and told those guys how much I liked it and had a lot of friends out there. And so we were going to book it to Oregon, hang out in Oregon for about a month, you know, just slowly playing shows in that area. Well, we got out there and those guys decided they missed time and wanted to go back to North Carolina. And we had met Alex as he played in a band called Termite Dog with another fellow that became a Harm Brother shortly after that, Guthrie McClinney. And they had a act together called Termite Dog. It was two acoustic guitars. And they had done maybe three or four little opening spots for us on the West Coast. And we were just blown away by those two, you know, individually as songwriters and performers and their act, you know. I think Ben actually ended up, I know Ben actually ended up recording Alex and Guthrie together as a two-piece acoustic guitar, you know, duo thing while we were out there on a little Tascam thing. But anyway, Ben and Zach, they decided they missed home and they kind of left me. They asked me if I wanted to go. I said, no, I'm staying in Oregon. And I woke up one day and all my stuff was in the kitchen of my buddy's house, and I was left with quite a few shows, including shows all the way back to North Carolina. And I didn't want to give up the shows that I had on the West Coast, nor did I want to give up any of the shows, but I ended up calling and canceling or emailing, you know, doing the proper things that need to go into canceling a show. Canceling the return, but I wanted to keep those shows that I had out there. So I called Guthrie and Alex and just asked them, hey, can you guys maybe, anything you could do to help me? Like, it would be great if you could help me in any way to do these shows. You know, maybe a couple of them, just sit in on a couple of them. And I was like, we can do three guitars, I don't care. You know, let's just try something. And Alex says, well, you know, I had a banjo. And he said, well, I think I can play a banjo. And I was like, really? And he said, yeah, I think I can play it. And he can obviously play it.
Right.
He's pretty, I don't think he knew how good he was at it, you know, at all. And he's, you know, always, he just slowly got better. But he's like, I think I can do that. And Guthrie said, you know, I can play it like some drums. And I was like, some drums? Like, what will we do? You know, drum, like a drum kit and just a guitar and a banjo. And Guthrie put together this, like, interesting little Easy, buddy. Drum kit. And it was just a kick, a washboard on a snare stand, and I think he had a hi-hat and a ride, and that was pretty much it. And we kind of put together this little thing in a matter of days, and we were like, they have a lot of great songs that they wrote together. As a matter of fact, on the new record, we actually did a cover of a Termite Dog song. And I don't think many people would know that at all, but Under the Axe on that record is a Termite Dog song. It's a song that Alex and Guthrie McLean wrote together. But we ended up playing that way, and it just kind of, it was just to do a couple of shows, and we went up and had like one practice, and I was like, let's add one of your guys' songs or a couple of your guys' songs to it too, you know, like, let's not, you know, I appreciate you guys helping, but you guys like write great songs, just tell me, you know, show me how to play, and we'll play along. And we added Christmas Is Canceled, which is another Termite Dog song that we do, and one of our probably more popular songs that people, you know, the fans of ours like, One in the Garden, was also a Termite Dog song. You know, Guthrie and Alex sing that together, so whenever we get together with those two people, we always like to incorporate Guthrie into that as well.
Awesome. So,
and it just kind of snowballed again. Just sadness.
Kind of like the guitar, it just kind of snowballed into something, right?
Yeah, the strings just keep adding. It just like it just kept pushing us toward, you know, pushing me towards making music, I guess.
So the Harn Brothers are known, you know, partly because of you and Alex's harmony, but for me, the songwriting is really what sticks out. Do you and Alex write together, or do you guys write separately?
Well, first I just want to say that I appreciate that a lot, because Alex and I both do take a lot of pride in that as our craft, as being songwriters. So I appreciate the fact that you're listening in and picking up on what we have to say, rather than just our voices melding together. But yeah, no, I write individually, and Alex writes individually, and we do write together as well. And the process for, you know, I can speak on my process more than I can about Alex's. I kind of know how he goes about it, but, you know, I'd hate to get something wrong in his way of doing things.
Sure.
But I will just sit down and start to kind of strumming out something, and then maybe, you know, waiting for something to come to me, and then start singing out. And when I get something that sticks in my head that I like, you know, and I won't even know what it's about until it's well written and I've listened to it a couple of times. But sometimes, you know, that's how I write. And sometimes I'll come to a point where I can't really do anything with it, and I'll just take it to Alex, and we'll sit down and work on it, and vice versa. That's, I mean, we do that with each other, so we definitely, you know, respect each other as songwriters. He's definitely my favorite songwriter, I don't know that I'm his, but I know that I'm one of his.
Sure.
So, you know, and when we sit down, we do often sit down, too, just together and be like, man, I have this idea, or, you know, we'll just pitch to each other an idea about a song, which is, you know, and then just kind of see what happens, you know. There's still songs that we've talked about writing that we haven't written. You said that we haven't written that we have, like, the solid ideas for, and maybe we have a course for it or something, and we just haven't gotten around to getting it out of us, I guess.
So your songs, you know, they invoke emotion, and they tell stories that are easily relatable. Do you incorporate a lot of your own personal experiences into your songs?
Man, to be honest, it's every song that I write is pretty much a true story. It really is. It's kind of, they're true stories, and a lot of that stuff has happened to me. A lot, you know, you all the way back to our first record, and those stories are all true stories. You know, Mardi Gras is kind of word for word, or Greetings from Mardi Gras is word for word, that, you know, what happened to me in a trip to New Orleans with a girlfriend at the time. You know, it's just word for word how that happened. And this record's kind of all about, you know, the songs that I wrote for it kind of are all about kind of pushing through a breakup and kind of being hopeful of you know, of feeling better in time. And,
sure.
And you know, so a tavern on there is a, you know, pretty much a true story. It is a true story.
That's one of my favorite ones on the album.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate it. It's kind of a bit of a strange one. I didn't know how it was going to go over, but I really didn't want to put that one on there at first. But Alex was kind of adamant about that we have that song on there. He thought it really belonged there, and I felt like it maybe didn't set in there as well as some of the other stuff. But you know, in hindsight, I think he was right. So I'm kind of That one is definitely true. They're all true stories. I can't lie.
Sure.
Yeah, they all happen, you know. All those things happen. And I just kind of, a long time ago when I was, you know, when I was talking about kind of picking up things from people with playing guitars and stuff, my buddy who was in a reggae band, and he told me that less was always more and simple was always better, you know. And so rather than, like, kind of pushing for metaphors and trying to, you know, really kind of strain myself to write something, I just kind of, like I said, I sit down with the guitar and I just kind of start speaking my mind.
Sure.
And that's kind of that's exactly what comes out. It's really hard for me to, you know, to keep that stuff inside because it's very much, you know, therapeutic to let it out.
So. Definitely. And I've talked to a lot of songwriters and that's what they've all said is they might not like having to go through it, but in the long run, it's very therapeutic to get those out, whether you play them for somebody or not.
Right. And I think that's definitely the case.
So
I draw from my life. Yep.
Right.
Long answer.
That's
a long road to get there.
That's
buddy.
All good. So you guys cover, I've seen videos of you guys covering Willie T's Hummingbird song. And I looked on your Facebook page, and under the band, you have him credited as Coach on the Facebook page. How has Willie influenced your music?
Well, I mean, if anything, you know, he makes us want to be better songwriters.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Definitely.
You know, he's up there. He's up there with the greats. I think he's a dear friend of ours, and yeah, he's the coach of our ball club. that's his doing, you know. He puts that metaphor of us being, you know, of any band being a ball club, you know, being a baseball team, and you know, maybe this one just happens to have two ace pitchers, as he calls it, and you know, we got, you know, strong shortstop and a hell of a first baseman, and then we got Willie coaching it through there. And That's kind of the deal, is that, you know, you hear something that dude writes and you just get, I mean, it, for lack of a better term, you know, or you get blown away by it.
Right, right.
And it's like anything. It's just, and he's one of those dudes that's going to tell it exactly like it is, you know. He's not putting any, you know, sugarcoating anything or in any way, you know. He's just kind of, he's open and honest and just, you know, you see him sit down and start, even if you're just sitting there with him, he's not, and he's just showing you something for the first time, you know, his eyes are pinched as tight as they, you know, as they are when he's up on stage.
Sure.
And, you know, and he's digging through, you know, digging into his emotional, you know, little bearded self and putting out something amazing every time.
The first time I had never heard his music, and he opened for the Clammy Cubes at some, like, Pizza Hut pizza place in Iowa. And I remember by the time it was done, I first of all, I didn't move. Like, from the time he started to sing until the time he was done, I didn't move. And I looked at my fiance at the time, and I was like, you know, it was kind of like, what the fuck just happened? You know what I mean? Like, it had that kind of power. Mostly if you've never heard him before and, you know, you're not familiar with it, you're just like, whoa, you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, the folks up in Minnesota call that the red fog.
The red fog.
That's what they call it, the red fog, when he just kind of sits down. And he has an effect. I've seen him do it, and I've seen him do that, like, in a bar room where he's just standing on a bar floor, not even on stage, and tucked back in a corner, and, you know, this little PA kicking out, and then he just stands up there with his little four-string guitar, and all of a sudden, you know, this loud-ass bar room has come to a dead halt, and they don't know what to do. And they don't say a word until the song's over, and right. It's just a, you know, a big uproar of applause, and then they're hanging on his next move. What's he going to do next? And he has that ability to do that. And some people just have that ability, and he's one of them.
That's what you want to have in a coach.
Conrad's another one, you know.
Right. But that's definitely what you want to have in a coach, right?
That's what you want, you know. That's what you want. He's a hell of a coach. He's a player coach, though, too. You know?
There you go.
Player coach.
So the new release, Better Days, came out mid-October. How long did it take you guys to – how long did you work on the album, and where did you guys record it?
Well, we worked on it for quite a while. We kind of toured around in the middle of the tour. We started playing a lot of the songs, kind of road testing a while. And then when it came time to recording them, we wanted to go to tape, which is – something that we hadn't done before, and so we spent a lot of time. You know, we played them, but it's a different beast playing them without singing them. So
sure.
We spent a lot of time prepping, playing them without. Once we were off tour, playing, practicing, getting it right, because we didn't have. You know, we're not on a super big budget, or anything,
right?
You know? So we got to come in and we got to knock it out. We got to get it in a couple of takes, and so. We had to practice. We went to St. Louis, Missouri, back to our old trusty buddy, Mr. David Beeman, who's done every one of our records at this point. We went to his Native Sound Studios and set up, and I think we were there for a total of 5 days. And we knocked out, we did 9 tracks, I think. 9 tracks in 5 days. The bulk of the record, anyway. And what we thought was the entire record. But we did it all right there. And we did it live, instrumentally live. And I know that there were a couple things we had to go back and maybe touch up. I think the bass, we kind of went back over to the upright, kind of a tricky thing to capture.
Right.
We went back on it, did that, and then layered everything on top of it. And at the end, this kid, Nathan Jacko, came in at our last night there. We were getting ready to leave in the morning or whatever, and we were trying to get some piano laid down on there. And Nathan, who had been up since about 9 a.m. and had went to his day job and then went and played a show at 7 and then went and played a show after that at 9 at a different venue, and then got out of the shows that he was doing at like 1 a.m., shows up at the studio at about 1:45, and we've got everything mic'd up, and he's laid the piano tracks, the finishing touches down on that. He laid that down by 4 a.m., and so he just came in, he's a professional guy, came in and laid it down.
Awesome.
And it felt real nice to have him in there. So it took us about 5 days, and that's it, to do it. And you're all pretty proud of what we came up with. But we did do one other track in a different studio. When we got done with that, with the record, listening to it without the track, When You See Me, it's kind of like, if you listen to it as kind of like, I don't know, as a whole, and what the whole vibe of the record is, it kind of felt like it was missing something. Like there was a lack of closure inside the record, inside the story going on inside the record. And I don't think myself or Alex kind of, you know, took too much from that or anything. But I sat down when we got back, and just like any other time when we were done recording, it's like it's kind of a weight off your chest to finally know that, okay, we've got that down. And we can kind of move on from there. And so it kind of was like sit down, and then within a couple of hours of being back in North Carolina, where we were calling home at the time, had written this song, When You See Me, just sitting there. And Alex came in, and he's like, what's that? And I was like, well, I just wrote it. And he's like, man, it's great, you know? And I was like, yeah, I'm liking it. I'm really liking it. And it kind of, the more I played it sitting around, and the more we started to try to kind of maybe mess around with playing it, the more we knew it had to kind of be there. And when we got to California, we linked up with Lucky Lou in Sirius, California, who has done, I think, maybe all the Good Luck records, or at least two of them. He's been at the helm engineering those, the Good Luck Thrift Store, that is. We just went over there, and then in 3 hours, we knocked that track out, and our buddy Jeremy Panic mixed it up for us, and then we sent everything down to Rocker Mike in L.A., and he mastered it up for us, and we have this record.
Nice. That's awesome. You don't intentionally necessarily, you know, choose songs to tell a story, but with the progression of being creative, I mean, you put a handful of songs together, and they will tell a story, and it was really cool to hear about, you had it done, and there was just that one thing missing, and that just kind of put it all together, and possibly by listening to it and you know, getting that album together, maybe that's what kind of brought that last song to the surface for you.
I totally agree with that statement, Blake, for sure. Because it's reflective of a time in my life, a time in Alex's life, where, you know, that we went through, you know, that part of our own history. And for me to put that kind of period and exclamation point on it, at least on my part of it, of the record, which, you know, it made me feel pretty good. It made me feel better about the situation that it had taken place and the things that had went on, and just in general, it just kind of gave me the closure that I couldn't exactly find, on my own.
Music is therapy, and even if you write it or you listen to it in some aspect or another.
Correct. I'm a fan of music first and foremost. I must say that. I've always been a fan of music, and I'll continue to go watch people. And be blown away by the people that I get to share stages with. Just last night, I played a solo show with Aaron Lee Tashin, who is fantastic, and I think he's just kind of now coming up as his own like solo entity. But he's done some great guitar work for a lot of great players, and our buddy Matt Wood stopped in, sure, in Knoxville too, and had a nice little setting with us. So it was great.
At the local bar in town, they had a tornado relief kind of benefit for our area, and one of the silent auction items was like it was a Matt Woods like basket. There was a T-shirt and a CD and stickers and buttons, and boom, I won it. I don't mess around.
Yeah, nice.
So, the life of a traveling musician can be rewarding in a number of like non-monetary ways. I mean, I've interviewed musicians for 7 years now, and not one of them can say, oh yeah, I got tons of money. You know what I mean? But there's other things that you get out of the lifestyle that you guys choose. But there's also, sure, there's also a lot of sacrifices that are made too. What do you think is one of the biggest sacrifices that you have made to make music and to tour and share your music?
Well, man, it's really, for myself, we haven't really stopped for a while. We finally took a break just right now, and we were supposed to be on break, but here I am on a solo tour right now for the first time ever in my life. We don't ever have any time. So, for us, it seemed like for a while anyway, like any kind of real, like, relationship with in a way doesn't have a chance. It just really doesn't have a chance at this point.
Sure.
I think maybe in time it could definitely something could happen, and I know that it does. Certain people are okay with it, but for me, it's just like myself. I never have been able to really keep a relationship going in a romantic one anyway, just because I just refuse to become stationary or complacent in my life. I I just have to do this. And, you know, Tommy V's got a great little tune. I think it's Busted Knuckles, where he says, you know, that never ending ache in your own. And it just, it gets in your bones. And I'm sure that that every musician out there that's done extensive touring knows that feeling and knows that, you know, that just you get the, like, I forget what they call that, where you, like, just don't want to stop moving around, like restless leg syndrome.
Sure.
Or something. And it's, so you got to kind of get out there. So I haven't really been able to have a real home. You know, we say that we're from Oregon. We've loosely been based from there, you know, since, you know, we started up, but Alex and I. But, you know, I can tell you right now that Alex is living in California, Ben's living in North Carolina, and I'm currently just kind of bouncing around, and I don't really have a home and haven't really had a home to call my own, you know, a place where I come back to and gather mail.
Sure.
That I'm going to be there, you know, every once in a while. I'm not in any place for too long. So getting on that for sure is another thing, you know, but then you got to think about the perk of that. And it's like, you know, Joey Henry once told me, he's like, people think I'm homeless. I'm not homeless. I got homes everywhere.
Right on.
I got family everywhere. You know what I mean? I'm not homeless. I got homes everywhere. Right. And that was him saying that kind of rang in my ear. And I still remember him saying that on the clearest day, and just being and blown away by that statement in itself, because it's the honest to God's truth. Right now I'm in Nashville, or outside of Nashville at a place where my buddy does his home base. So, you know, it's fantastic.
So the most important thing is, where do folks go to get the new Harmon Brothers CD, Better Days, and to find out where you guys are touring?
Well, the touring, I'll touch on the back side of that. The touring right now is kind of at a standstill for the band, just only because we needed a break. We decided finally that it was time that we take a good, you know, a good little break and kind of, you know, evaluate where we're at, and it's kind of an inopportune time to do so with a new record out. But I think our fans understood, and do understand why the band's not out right now, and we won't be until March. And as a band, however, I'm out doing shows. I have some cool shows coming up here in a couple of weeks, actually. I don't know if you're aware of the Whispering Beard Folk Festival out in, they hold it out in Friendship, Indiana. It's just outside of Cincinnati.
Huh.
And it happens in, I think it was August, or, yeah, it was in August that they had it last year. And they have some great acts out there. And they're kind of throwing a nice little, like, their crew is throwing a little Christmas kind of event, like a little Christmas gift to their fans in the city of Cincinnati. And I was just up there, and it just happened to work out that now I'm going to be there on the 16th of December, solo playing with the likes of Woody Pines, who's fantastic, the Tillers, who their star is totally alive, and Blind Boy Patton, and just confirmed today as well, Mr. Willie T. Taylor will be there.
Awesome.
So, and that's a free show, too. That's a free show in Cincinnati, or in Newport at the Southgate House. And I think it's going to be a cool little Monday night. That's kind of tight.
Hey, Ray, I want to thank you very much for being on IBWIP. It was great to finally to be able to talk with you. Kudos on the new album. Tell Alex and the guys,
man,
kudos. And anytime you need anything from IBWIP, definitely let us know.
Okay. Yeah, and real quick, if I got you, I don't think I got to it. You can get the tour dates on theharmbrothers.com. That's there. And you can slip over by our Facebook page. We're always posting and stuff on there about the shows coming up, when Alex is doing shows out in California and Oregon, and I'm doing shows out in the Midwest and the Southeast. As far as the record goes, I want to send anybody to fluffandgravyrecords.com, and that's, you can get it anywhere online, iTunes, all that stuff. But if you go to Fluff and Gravy, to our beautiful label there, you can get all the stuff. You can get the vinyl records. You can get it all, not just the digital stuff. So hard copies, and our buddy Aaron Birch did a great job on the artwork, and think that it's something that folks are should they want to listen, they should maybe have the vinyl too, because it's got some bonus tracks.
Oh, now I gotta go get me one. But we'll put the link we'll put the link up to to the website to get the album, and also to your guys' website. And Ray, thanks again. I have to get off the phone and order my my vinyl.
All right, buddy. Thanks, Blake.
All right, take care of yourself.
All right, bye.
I'm not home now, but I will be. When I knock upon your door and you hear me, from those hard times, all those heartaches, those nasty turns and tugs.
Are you a blogger or a podcaster, or you're just not happy with your web hosts? You need to check out HostGator.com. You're going to find web hosting made easy and affordable. HostGator offers unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click script installs with a free site builder, and the best control panel out there. Stop by today and try a free demo to see how easy it is. And if you use a special coupon code, Section 8686, you'll save 25% off your web hosting packages. What do you got to lose? Check out HostGator.com and take a bite out of your web hosting costs.